Major support for Out to Lunch on WWNO provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937, now with more than 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. Online at joneswalker.com. Additional support comes from Fidelity Homestead Savings Bank, Resource Management LLC, and Luba Workers Comp.
From Commander's Palace Restaurant in the Garden District in New Orleans, we're out to lunch with Peter Ricchiuti. Peter Ricchiuti is Tulane University's A.B. Freeman School of Business professor and economist. It's business, New Orleans style.
Hi, I'm Peter Ricchiuti. Welcome to Out to Lunch. Here in New Orleans, both as a city and as a business community, we're often torn between the past and the future. We want to hold on to our traditions, but we know we have to change. We're proud of our traditionally tourist-driven hospitality industry, but we know we need to diversify and, if at all possible, put some emphasis on manufacturing. My guests on Out to Lunch today answer all these requirements. It doesn't get much more traditional in New Orleans than Jonathan Berticelli's company, Studio 3. At Studio 3, they make Mardi Gras floats, the same way they've been making them with paper mache since Jonathan's father brought the craft here from Italy. You've seen Jonathan's flamboyant floats in Rex, Bacchus, Endymion, and other parades. Jonathan, welcomed out to lunch.
Thank you.
Now, I think people that are listening are wondering, are you a direct competitor of Blaine Kern, or is it a...
Sometimes we can compete and bid on the same job, but actually I have a very good relationship with them. And when my father first came here, he worked for Blaine. We go way back where many, many years ago in the 50s, Blaine, when he first started in the business, he started to import some of the most beautiful pieces that they'd built in Italy for Carnival in Italy. That's one of the ways he got started. And when he was traveling to Italy, in my hometown of Viareggio, which is in Tuscany, he met my father. And many, many years later, my father decided to come visit the United States, and he looked up Blaine. It's like, let me go see the quote-unquote American. And, and then the rest is history. He worked for Blaine for, I think, about 10 years. And then we went independent back in the 80s. So we still have a great relationship with them, and sometimes we definitely bid on the same job. I have a niche, in New Orleans. I do certain specialty items. I don't do whole parades like they do, but I do pieces and parts of parades. I also build a lot of floats out of town, and as a matter of fact, the Butterfly King that I built.
Oh, that's a beautiful piece.
2 years ago, I built the main king.
That's in the Rex Parade.
Yeah. Right? Barry Kern asked me to build it, so that's how friendly we are.
Well, molto bene.
Molto bene.
There we go. Now, across the table, another Jonathan is sitting with us, and he is the Jonathan taking us into the future. Jonathan Shudmak is the co-founder of NOLA 3D Printing, and if you're not sure what 3D printing is, imagine your computer printer, instead of printing out a picture of a cup of coffee, it actually makes you an actual coffee cup that holds coffee. That's not science fiction. That's happening today. Jonathan, welcome to Out to Lunch.
Thanks, Peter. It's great to be here.
I got to tell you, having two guests called Jonathan is a bit of a challenge for radio. So this is how we'll go.
You won't get it wrong.
No, I'm not. And the people at home are going to get this straight because our producer has created a great system here. Jonathan Berticelli, seeing that you make paper mache, and Jonathan Shudmak, seeing that you make plastic objects, I'm going to go with paper Jonathan and plastic Jonathan. This is how we're going to go here, if that's okay with you guys.
I'm greener.
Oh, there you go. There, perfect. Okay, plastic Jonathan. There's a lot of talk about 3D printing being the next big thing. Astronauts on the space station are going to start printing replacement parts instead of shipping them in from Earth. There are reportedly going to be all kinds of everyday applications from prosthetics to jewelry, but right now it's pretty cutting-edge stuff. You, Jonathan, have a degree in civil engineering from West Point and an MBA from Harvard. There's a lot of businesses that you could be in that would seem to be a lot safer. What made you want to jump into 3D printing this early?
It's a good question, and I think people who know me would think that I would be the last one you would associate with a technology-based startup.
You're kind of a Luddite in real life, or is a?
I'm more of an old school industry type of guy. Spent most of my finance career in the utilities and oil and gas business. But, you know, this is a real exciting technology. And what I've seen is it has applications across multiple industries. And every day, more industries seem to catch on to what they can do with 3D printing, whether it's speeding up their design process or making finished goods or just making checkpoints along the way in their process.
Give me an example of something you can make with a 3D printer.
You can make
ham sandwich. What is it? Yeah.
You know, 3D with our 3D printer and the FDM technology, we can make anything out of plastic. And you know, there are certain constraints on size, but we've made everything what we call from dresses to drones. In that we have made actually a dress that was shown in a fashion show recently. And we've made parts for the aerospace and defense business.
And the dress was delivered by a drone, which is so, that is wow.
Those two projects were not linked.
Now, paper, Jonathan, the floats you build stand out. They're the ones that when they go by, everybody goes, wow. That's not because people are throwing beads at you from behind them, but because they're really, truly works of art. And although most of us have seen your work, including the Mr. Bingle, right, in front of the...
My father built that, yeah.
That's pretty awesome. This, very few of us will get to experience what it must be like to be the person who created it. What's it like for you on Mardi Gras when you see your floats go by?
Well, usually I'm way too tired to enjoy it. But, no, it's satisfaction, obviously. You know, it's nice to have something out there that the public sees and... at the end of the day, it's what I do is always related to festivity, to Mardi Gras. It's always a happy theme, you know. So I've been blessed to grow up and work in an environment that is always revolves around, you know, Mardi Gras and people having a good time and celebration. So it's a good feeling. I mean, it's rewarding.
And John, where are you guys in town? Where do these come from?
My warehouse is in the Mid City on Toulouse Street.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I'm really close to City Park.
And I've been told that you're a boxer, and there's a boxing gym in your studio.
Yeah, well, you know, I kind of follow my father's footsteps very closely. My father was actually a prize fighter and also an artist, I grew up with both. I grew up in a studio building floats and sculpting and painting, and at the same time, my father also managed and had a boxing gym in Italy. And so I was involved in both.
Gee, my dad was an Italian boxer too. We must be cut from the same cloth here. This is a pretty wild stuff. When I see one of the things that I'm curious is like when I see something like the butterfly piece you did, do people usually come to you with an exact idea of what they want or kind of a rough estimation, and you kind of think it out?
You know, the Butterfly King is an example that was very specific. Because it had to look like and be like something that came from Mardi Gras history in New Orleans. You know, I work in so many different with so many different people and so many different ideas that sometimes some of my clients have absolutely no idea what they want. They just have a very abstract idea. So we design and draw and try to bring it to a more detailed idea. And then I have clients that are very specific. So everything in between, from very vague to very detailed.
So, and if the design isn't going right, you just go over to the speed bag and try to get that out of your system.
And by the way, I wanted to add that, plastic, Jonathan, speaking of 3D printing, actually people in my industry are beginning to look at that technology to build props and sculptures out of using the same technology. So there's a little bit of a crossover and overlap here.
It's funny. I was going to mention that just as a joke. I think the thing you're talking about is actually components of a float.
The props, the sculptural pieces.
Yeah.
Because we, you know, in more modern times, we've started drifting away a little bit from old traditional.
Thank you.
Old traditional carving and sculpting of clay and making the mold. All these old methods, and we started carving and sculpting foam, polystyrene. And different kinds of foams, and these machines can, and you can correct me on this, but I know that they can cut and shape polyester, polystyrene, I mean different types of plastics. You know, in the world of plastic, there's a million different kinds of plastics. So there's definitely people that are in my industry that are beginning to look into that.
Yeah, that's right. We have seen some interest in particular in the movie prop,
yeah,
prop
absolutely.
Side of the business.
Yeah.
What makes 3D printing in some cases very applicable to movie props is sometimes they need something on the set tomorrow morning.
Yep.
And one of the nice things about 3D printing for all industries is if you send us a file, a design file in the computer, if the printer's available, we can push print. And when it's done, we can send it to you, deliver it to you, or whatnot. So that turnaround time and the ability to make something exact, get it to you very quickly, is a huge advantage that 3D printing brings as compared to some of the more traditional methods.
And what is that business going to look like 5 years from now? I mean, I know that's a tough question. There's some publicly traded 3D companies and such. But, I mean, is it same kind of thing where just about everything is going to be in-house and there'll be a few players like yourself or different?
You know, it's really hard to say. I think there's a lot of hype out there that suggests that 3D printing is going to replace traditional manufacturing and large-scale manufacturing. We think that's unlikely, and I think the industry really thinks that that's unlikely. But what 3D printing can do is really, it's really more in its application for other industries, in speeding up times to market. And if you think about the implication that can have to, say, a consumer products company, they can do 3, 4, 5 iterations of a single consumer product design and test it and put it in your hands well before you might even be able to do one iteration, perhaps in the old method, if you have to carve something or use some of the other methods. So it's exciting. We think there's a lot of opportunity. As more industries catch on and this becomes the norm for more industries, we think there will be a bigger role for us to play.
I have trouble operating my regular printer in the office, so I'm not sure I'm going to be your competition yet. Now, this is the part of the show we call the checklist, where we ask you a couple of questions that you probably wouldn't find on a loan application. I'll start with a paper, Jonathan. Jonathan, how do you talk to your employees about their performance? You've got people you manage. How do you talk to them about how they're doing?
Well, you know, I'm pretty laid back, but I always keep my eye on the ball, meaning that the final product is what counts, the way things look. I don't tend to be very overwhelming, but I check on, I've developed, a keen eye through my years of experience. So I try in the most friendly way to sort of keep them in the boundaries of what I consider, what we should do. And I just give guidelines, it's guidelines, and then I give a lot of freedom within those guidelines.
Because you're working with artists, right? I mean, kind of.
And the key thing is, like anything else, you find the people that are talented, that are good, that you trust, and then you kind of have to let them go a little bit. That's just the way I feel about it. And the more they feel trusted, and the more you challenge them to do something that is good, then the better are the results. That's always been my, my conclusion.
It's a good rule of thumb. And plastic, Jonathan, is there anything in the global economy or the big picture politically that you really keep a close eye on how it's going to affect the whole 3D printing basis?
Well, I mean, I think, general economic conditions in the global economy is really what drives manufacturing, drives consumer goods, particularly consumer discretionary.
So if I was to forecast you, would I kind of look, are you going to grow kind of with GDP but at a faster pace? Is that the kind of thing?
Well, we would expect to grow at almost a hyper rate compared to GDP because, this is disruptive technology. It's hard to measure how it might grow like you might measure, other more consumable type goods.
And just to step back, because I'm very familiar with the term, but some people aren't. Disruptive technology sounds negative, but it's what does it mean?
Yeah, it's actually a very, very positive technology. It's a technology that's sort of different and changes the way things have been done, the things have always been done. And I think the classic example is the original copy machines, the 2D copy machines.
Got all those monks out of business.
Yeah,
right?
the original thought was that why would you ever need more copies than you could make with carbon paper. But sure enough, you put a copy machine in an office and all of a sudden you need a whole lot more copies and everybody needs them. And, the norm is not to make 4 or 5 copies, but to make 25.
That's very, so that it'd be difficult to forecast the demand because it kind of creates itself.
It is. The other thing that this really reminds me of is when TiVo first came out.
Okay.
And no one could understand why would you need it? But once you start watching TV and you don't have commercials, you can't imagine watching TV with commercials. And now DVRs are in most homes.
That's right. Now you get angry at how long it takes to do all that. Jonathan Berticelli, in this case, Paper Jonathan, where do you think the whole Mardi Gras tradition goes from here? I mean, the tradition of being able to build these floats with paper mache, it's like yours was kind of handed down by the generations. Mm-hmm. Is that what's going to happen going forward? Are there new artisans coming on board?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's just in New Orleans, you have, I would say probably 15, 20 really good sculptors that do this kind of work. And three or four of them are really, really, really good. They're masters. And I see this being handed down. If you go to, for instance, to Mardi Gras World, or you come to my studio and other studios in town, Royal Artists, there's people that are with a lot of ambition and a lot of young talent trying to, you know, outdo each other every day. And that's great, you know. But the old traditional way that I do paper mache is definitely evolving. You know, I do that, but I also use all the modern methods. And then we also carve styrofoam. And we also use, are constantly looking for, you know, a better way of doing it. So the challenge is, you know, there's transition, because the challenge is to still have the very artistic touch and still have in the sculptural component of it, have the expression, have the things that makes a sculptural piece look really good on a float, but using very modern materials. And sometimes different materials like styrofoam will give you different effects. It doesn't behave the same way as clay does. Because when I do it the old way, we do it in clay first, then we cast it. We make a mold on clay, then we take the mold off, and then in the mold we press the paper mache. It's a very long process, but it's a beautiful process. When you sculpt clay, you can get any kind of form and shape. It's basically like 3D printing, but with your hands, you know? So it's very natural and organic, you see? So I see people that are beginning to do some very good work with foam, but they're still not totally there, because foam, as you carve it, it just behaves differently. You can't really put your hand on it. You have to do it with a tool. So as somebody like myself that knows this from the inside out, I see the transition to more modern materials, but still having to give it that very beautiful old look and touch.
Absolutely. Now we're at the pay it forward section of the show, and that's where we ask our guests to generously use their experience and expertise to help out another local business, because we're good people in New Orleans here. Safeguard Business Systems makes promotional items, stuff like polo shirts, tote bags, pens, iPhone cases, anything that you can have a company logo on, and that business gives it away as a promotion. Now, Safeguard is owned by Kathleen Wilkin, and Kathleen is a graduate of the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Business Program over at Delgado, where we've got a lot of our Pay It Forward guests from. For the past 15 years, Safeguard has done over $1 million in sales a year, so Kathleen obviously knows what she's doing, but she wants to do more. She wants to know how to finance her expansion. Kathleen writes to us and says, how do you continue to grow and at the same time sustain the profitability of the business? Paper Jonathan, Plastic Jonathan, what do you think about the issue of growth? How much do you think Kathleen should plow back into the business to grow it? And would you advise her to use her own capital at all? Maybe get a loan, a partner, investor?
I took a look at the website. It looks like they've got some interesting products that they offer. Probably makes sense to periodically review these business lines for profitability, both on an absolute and a relative basis. Are these products or services making money? And if so, are they making money compared to the next best alternative? Because I'm sure, like everyone else, she has limitations on her staff's capabilities and time, as well as the equipment.
So, for instance, like every periodically look at the maybe even think of dropping the least profitable and coming up with a couple of new ones periodically to keep it fresh.
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes, you know, companies get into business lines and it makes sense when they first get in, but conditions change. Maybe the market prices go down, maybe costs go up, and before you know it, if you don't review it, you could end up in a business that you don't recognize anymore.
Right. Now, Jonathan, you're coming at us from the other side here. Any advice for Kathleen?
Well, you know, I think what Plastic Jonathan just said is absolutely correct. You know, I myself, even though I'm in this much more if you will, artistic world, you know, the product, as he said, the lines, you know, is very important. And I review my products all the time. And I would say that, you know, you have to invest some money into, you know, upgrading your line and keeping it, you know, for lack of better terms, keeping it fresh and interesting. So, very wisely, I would say that down the line, she has to invest some money into the future. There's no way around it. I don't really see a way around it.
Yeah, I mean, accepting outside capital is always a big decision. And you go from a situation where you call all the shots and you answer to yourself and your employees to having someone else. And whether it's a bank saying, you know, where's my interest payment, or it's an investor saying, you know, explain to me why we may or may not have made our numbers this month or this quarter. It's a big decision, and you have to understand what you're getting into. And it's not, in many cases, simply a financial trade-off.
That's a good thing for someone to know. You know, Jonathan Berticelli, Jonathan Schudmack, you both represent where we've been and where we're going, from the traditional paper mache and Mardi Gras to futuristic 3D printing. It's been great to meet both of you. Paper Jonathan, we look forward to seeing your work rolling down the street for many years to come, and it always does stand out. And Plastic Jonathan, we look forward to seeing your work, well, everywhere. Jonathan's, thank you so much for joining me on Out to Lunch today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Guys were terrific. My guests on Out to Lunch today have been Jonathan Berticelli from Studio 3 and Jonathan Schudmack from NOLA 3D Printing. To find out more about Paper Jonathan's floats or Plastic Jonathan's products, follow the links on our websites, WWNO.org and itsneworleans.com. Our show is recorded live over lunch at Commander's Palace in New Orleans. Commander's Palace serves lunch Monday through Friday, jazz brunch on Saturday and Sunday with live music, and dinner 7 nights a week. The producer of our show is Grant Morris. Our technical producer is Eric Merle. The shrink wrap, Jennifer Smith, is our researcher. Mitch Foreman wrote and performs all the music on Out to Lunch. You can get this show as a podcast, and you can listen to past shows and keep up with us on all kinds of social media by going to our websites, itsneworleans.com and wwno.org. Support for Out to Lunch comes from PreSonus Audio Electronics. PreSonus makes Studio One music production software, Studio Live digital mixing consoles, Aeris Studio monitors, and more. More information about Baton Rouge-based PreSonus is online at presonus.com. Out to Lunch is a production of INO Broadcasting and WWNO. For itsneworleans.com and WWNO 89.9 FM. I'm Peter Ricchiuti. I look forward to meeting you again next week for Out to Lunch around the table here at Commander's Palace. Till then, be well, be safe, be happy. Bye-bye.
Major support for Out to Lunch on WWNO provided by the law firm of Jones Walker. Online at joneswalker.com. Additional support provided by Fidelity Homestead Savings Bank, Resource Management LLC, and Luba Workers' Comp.